Welcome to Hog Tales, the podcast that goes bump in the night.
Hey guys, welcome back to Haunt Heads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I'm your host, Janine. I am here with Miss Mimi Steven, of course.
Hello, everyone.
Who is holding a wiener dog right now that I am babysitting. She's fine. It's fine. I don't mind.
Very cute dog.
But Mimi is getting kisses from Miss Molly, so it's going to be a good day. It's a good day when you get dingus kisses.
Yes, it is.
All right. So let's see here. The first thing that I wanted to mention this week was a thank you to the ladies at the podcast You Don't Know-ish. I believe it's Sheena or Shayna and Jennifer. Thank you, ladies, so much for the shout-out on your last episode. We really appreciate it. I think it's great that our podcast reminds you of food. I'm constantly thinking about food myself, so burritos and black-eyed peas for the win. Other than that, I wanted to say that I am tickled by the fact that you guys got the heebie-jeebies over the black-eyed kids piece, because I had a lot of fun recording that. So, yeah, thanks, guys. If anybody out there in podcast land is looking for a good podcast to listen to, You Don't Know-ish has a lot of varied content. So there's a little bit of stuff for everybody, so please check them out if you can, and leave them a nice iTunes review right after you leave us a nice iTunes review, because we need more than two. So if you could get on that, that'd be fab. Let's see. Mimi, what do you got happening this week?
Oh, what do I have happening? Well, tomorrow is my last day of teaching.
Yeah.
For the summer.
Woo.
And next week is somewhat of a free week. However, my transmission went on my car week, got that fixed.
Yeah, right.
Then I broke a tooth, so I got that fixed. And then we have a well at our house,
and
the pump went, so we got that fixed. And now, the other day, our garage door fell down, so tomorrow it's getting fixed. So I think it's going to be a very mild summer. At least I hope so.
Let's hope so. Yeah, cross our fingers.
Yeah, yeah. Next week should be working on the house week. I have the dumpster for another week and got to finish that kitchen and a little remodeling.
Oh, you're tearing out your kitchen too?
Well, not the whole thing, just part of it.
Oh, just part of it.
And I'm putting up a backsplash and doing painting and all sorts of fun things. Mm. But the biggest exciting thing that we're doing is purging.
So you're all putting on masks and going from house to house with semi-automatic weapons and...
No. We're just cleaning and getting rid of stuff.
Well, it's a different kind of cleaning, but okay. All right, I'll take it.
Yeah, no. That's about me. What about you?
God, well, aside from the window for Corvus review sealing up for another issue, I don't really have a whole hell of a lot going on. I'm probably going to wind up spending a lot of time outside if the weather holds.
Good.
Because it's supposed to be 80s, right?
Nice. I hope
90s?
No, I said nice.
Oh, nice. I thought you said 90s. I was like, whoa.
I hope it's not the 90s. I'll be inside. I don't like it too hot.
Yeah, right. Oh, no, 90s is too much. That's way too much. I remember the one summer, I think we were living in Bayview, and it was like 106.
Ooh.
And I was just sick the entire time. And
yeah.
We couldn't go outside. And yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
So let's see here. This week I have got Hidden Killers of the Victorian Home. Should be pretty interesting. I did a piece on the Haunt Heads blog about the sheil green fabric and wallpaper and whatnot that was popular in the Victorian era. And I thought I would share that. I kind of like to do the blog posts and then present them on the podcast because it's kind of like having a little bit of a transcript.
Okay.
So if some people like to read more or they like to listen more, then they have a little, you know, they have the best of both worlds.
Sounds good to me.
So what do you have?
I am talking about a house near where I live in Mequon, Wisconsin.
Nice.
That I know of. I've been there when it was a steakhouse, but I had no idea it was haunted.
Is this the haunted steakhouse that you wanted to go to?
No, this is a different one. The haunted steakhouse I wanted to go to, I think, is in Mequonago.
Oh, Mequonago.
But I'm not sure. I have to look that one up.
I was like, I thought you said, wait, it's closed?
Well, yeah. I guess somebody actually recently bought the house I'm going to talk about today. So it's a private residence now.
Yeah.
And it's been a steakhouse and a roadhouse and a banquet hall and a catering company, so...
Lots of stuff going on there.
Yeah, who knew?
Mm-hmm. So who went first last week?
You. Oh, no, me.
You did?
No, yes, you're going.
I'm definitely going. Okay. All right, so like I said, I'm talking about some of the hidden killers that were present in the Victorian era home. I recently found a documentary on YouTube that you can look up called Hidden Killers of the Victorian Home.
Oh.
And it's really cool. It's hosted by this really awesome lady that has a really great presence and just puts the information just perfectly to you. Everything is, you know, laid out perfectly. So if you want to watch that, it's available on YouTube and it's free. I like to find free stuff and then tell you guys about free stuff and tell Mimi about free stuff because everybody likes free stuff.
Absolutely.
Everybody.
Nothing better than free.
Right? Well, I mean, chocolate.
Well, chocolate's a given.
Yeah, I mean, I would pay for chocolate, but free chocolate is good too. Okay, whatever. Let's see. So, something really interesting about the Victorians is the Victorians coined the phrase safe as houses, which basically means that it's so safe, it's ultra safe. It's like being at home. And the home in the Victorian era was the heart of everything. It was like base camp for the entire family.
Mm-hmm.
It was also a time when the phrase standard of living first appeared. Everybody in the Victorian era was very concerned about how they looked to their friends and how they looked to other people. So they wanted to buy the most expensive draperies that they could afford. They wanted to look the best. They wanted to smell the best. They wanted to have that higher standard of living and kind of, you know, show the working class how it's done, which was, you know, a continuing theme. A big part of this good taste and status was wallpaper. They were very concerned about the patterns of wallpaper. They had little booklets that they would get that had all the different samples of wallpaper. Mm-hmm. The most popular color of wallpaper was something called sheil green, or sheil's green, S-C-H-E-E-L-E-S. I had to look it up because I was trying to figure out what the British lady was saying, and I was like, I have no idea.
Is that like a pea?
What you're saying. It's like an emerald almost.
Oh, okay.
And the way that a lot of the wallpaper was, and actually even in these books, if you turned it a certain way, it was almost like it scintillated.
Oh.
It was very vibrant and very bright, and the Victorians loved it.
My kind of thing.
And this was also a time when they introduced gaslighting. And so the Victorians wanted to have this bright, robust wallpaper to be shown under this new gaslight that was so, you know, it was much brighter than just candlelight. You know, people in the home didn't have to huddle around one candle anymore, you know, to read their paper or do their cross stitch or whatever. They could go in separate parts of the house and they could turn on the light and enjoy, you know, the standard of living that they created for themselves. You know, with that light, they could enjoy a lot of the wallpaper had very intricate patterns. You know, they had little pictograms of like little people like dancing or playing or whatever, you know, and you could clearly see that stuff in this light. So it was very cool for them. when they went to pick out this wallpaper, of course the first thing that they recommended at the wallpaper store or at the vendor was this Scheel green color, because everybody was getting it. It was a fad. Kind of like rompers or... What's another fad today? Male rompers.
Oh,
and
those are gross. I'm sorry. I can't stand those.
They make men look like huge babies. Like, I feel like they need to have, like... Do they have, like, button crotches?
I don't know.
Or do they just have buttons all the way down the front? Because I'm like...
I don't know.
Because, you know, then you change their diaper, you know.
I've
just
seen
unbutton
a few pictures,
crotch.
But ew.
Yeah, it's... They're pretty bad. So yeah. What... Okay, so what's popular? It's rompers for men... And
still wearing the pants down below the butt. I hate that.
Oh, yeah. I'm not really a fan of that either.
No, that's still big, though.
What else?
I saw a man the other day who looked like he was about 60, 65, wearing his pants below his butt. And I was like, dude, pull him up.
Well, you know, I mean, maybe he has an excuse. Maybe he just can't bend over that far to pull him up. You don't know. It's possible.
Well, I don't know. You look pretty spry to
me. I'm making excuses for this man that I've never met. So yeah, it's basically like the male romper nowadays. You know, it was a big fad.
I cannot see my husband in one of
I can't see anyone in one of, even women. Uh-uh. I can't see women in wearing that or liking that. I just don't understand.
I don't either.
You know, I mean, it's easy to put on. Like, it makes you probably feel like a 3-year-old putting on your clothes because you don't have to match.
I hope I never see anyone wearing one. Walmart. We'll see them in Walmart.
Well, yeah, but we'll see them in, like, on, like, the People of Walmart webpage.
Yeah.
In all the wrong ways.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm never going to get that out of my head now.
No. Oof. I'm going to be thinking about rompers. That for a while, too.
Let's see here. So the other great thing about this, this wallpaper, the color was very intense and it wouldn't fade. The sales of the paper went through the roof. Everybody was just super into this wallpaper. And then all of a sudden, all of these reports of people getting sick started to be reported in the paper. And people couldn't figure out why they were getting sick. And there were some instances where they would feel ill, and then they would, you know, Victorians often, like, went to the seaside or, like, had time outside, you know, whatever. And when they did that, they felt better. Well, they felt better because they were away from this wallpaper the wallpaper was painted or coated with arsenic. And
what would the arsenic do? Make it vibrant or
It was this particular color that they wanted to get, that they used arsenic to achieve.
Okay.
And so when it got really popular, everybody had this in their house. Like, everybody who could afford it had it because it was a status symbol. And people just started getting sick. Just, you know, I mean, they'd have symptoms similar to cholera.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have dry throat. They would have difficulty swallowing. They'd have abdominal pain. Vomiting, diarrhea. The unfortunate thing about arsenic poisoning is the fact that it can be mistaken for something else. Mm-hmm. Like, it could be mistaken for food poisoning, which, I mean, probably wouldn't have been so outlandish back then that people would have gotten sick from some sort of food that they'd eaten. You know, or just a cold that was coming on. You know, people had no definitive way. They were just figuring out what germs were. And they believed that, you know, germs were spread by flies, you know. So there were, like, all these contraptions that were made to kill flies. And, you know,
did
because
they have
flies...
arsenic in them?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they did. Were they green? Maybe.
Huh.
The unfortunate thing about arsenic poisoning is the fact that it affects the whole of the digestive tract.
Okay.
So you're just... I mean, it's... Yeah, it's really bad. Cases of children dying after chewing on pieces of the wallpaper.
Kind of like lead paint of today.
Don't chew on the walls, kids. Yes. You know, they would rip off a little piece of wallpaper and put it in their mouth, and the next thing you know, they're very, very sick, and they get sicker, and then they expire. Perk. Also, arsenic gases from wallpaper or fungal growth on wallpaper that got damp. Because arsenic can be, you know, if you dry it out, it can crumble into like a powdery,
oh, sure.
like a dust.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it gets wet and it gets moldy, then the mold spores mm-hmm. can have arsenic in them. So it was, I mean, super easy to get sick, and people couldn't figure out why. Arsenic was used for flocked wallpaper. It was used to dye curtains. It was used to dye bedding, wow. clothing. People would wear arsenic-colored clothing against their skin.
Ay, ay, ay.
And then they'd wonder why they were getting sick. You know, it was a stumper for them. I mean, you know, the funny part about it was, you know, the wallpaper manufacturers would say, oh, no, you know, our product is completely safe. It's completely safe. You can eat it. And they'd even have advertisements with people eating
ay, ay, ay.
The wallpaper and saying, oh, no, no, it's fine. You know, it won't hurt you. They said that the product, you know, would leave the person who ate it unaffected. You know, it wouldn't affect you at all. It was fine. Oh, no, it's not the wallpaper. I mean, gas companies did the same thing. You know, they're talking about how the inhalation of gas is good for people. Like, really? It's good for people? I mean, I know that, like, there's stuff out there now that says, like, farts. Smelling farts is supposed to be good for you.
What?
I don't know. It's like, it comes out on Facebook occasionally. I've
never heard that before.
Yeah, it comes out on Facebook occasionally and does the rounds, and I saw it recently, and I was like, really, like, gas? Like, flatulence? But the Victorians were like, no, really, like, if the pilot on your gas lamp blows out and you're just breathing gas all night, well, that's fine. And they would even say, well, it's so safe. The gas that you're using is so safe that if the lights in your house go out, you can light a candle and go see what the problem is.
Oh, sure.
Because our gas is so safe. You know, one minute you're sitting in the freaking living room, like, having dinner, and the next minute you're leaving the house without using the door. Like, it's just insane.
Wow.
It's completely insane. The other thing was, Victorians rarely opened their windows because there was a lot of smog in the city. So if that sort of thing happened, like, if their gas lamps blew out, then the whole place would just fill with gas, and it was just a time bomb. You know, wow. It's just waiting for the door to click shut, or...
I wonder how many homes actually did explode.
I don't have it here, but yeah, let me tell you. Yeah, arsenic dyed gowns, mercury hats, and highly flammable clothing were in great supply, huge supply, in the Victorian era in Europe. So I suppose that this one would fit into the weird and wonderful category because mm-hmm. it's not paranormal.
Right.
But it is kind of freaky to think about, you know, the safety measures that just right. weren't taken, you know, it wasn't, right. they didn't consider that. And that's kind of the reason why I'm so fascinated with the Victorians, mm-hmm. is because of the way that they lived and the way that they controlled their environment and experienced the world that they knew. So I find it very interesting.
An elegant time period.
Very, very elegant, and also very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Proper.
Very proper. Just very, like nose in the air, like, mm-hmm. proper. And not really, I don't really see it in a snobbish way. I just see it as, like, women were women and men were men in right. the Victorian era. And that right. was the way that it was. Right. And, you know, the women didn't, you know, do, like, the highfalutin women
right.
Didn't do anything except sit and look pretty for their husbands. And suffocate in their corsets.
Mm-hmm.
Have the, what do they call it, the vapors?
Yeah. Well, I always liked the dresses and yeah. the corsets.
Yeah.
I think I would have enjoyed mm-hmm. being in that time period. The velvets and the well, satins. Well, except for the arsenic, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the arsenic was kind of a, yeah, that was kind of a shitstorm. In the early 19th century, fashionable people invested in garments that conveyed their lot in life, and even if these garments proved a danger to them, people didn't really care. They just dressed to impress.
Huh.
Dresses and accessories were often dyed by mixing copper and highly toxic arsenic trioxide, or white arsenic, to achieve that brilliant green hue, that shield green, that was popular at the time. Women would adorn themselves with imitation flowers and wreaths that were dusted with this deadly substance, and they would inhale the powder and absorb the toxins through their skin, because every time you touch it, you know, you're absorbing it through your skin.
Right. Wow.
But by far, the employees that were tasked with producing these items were hit the hardest, because they had to work in this environment day in, day out. They had no choice. So one such account from 1861 involves a young woman named Matilda Scherer. She was only 19 and worked in one of the many factories tasked with creating the wearable curios that women of the time desired. And they were like little fake flowers with like leaves and stuff on them. And you could put them on your lapel or you could wear them in your hat. And the women were just like apeshit for them. So they were in high demand, high supply.
Mm-hmm.
Her specific job in the factory was to dust or fluff the leaves on these little corsages with this green powder, which was, you know, the popular color, the Scheele green. Her exposure was so high that the tips of her fingers had taken on a permanent green hue, and even the whites of her eyes were green.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, she was really, really highly exposed to it. When she ate her lunch, not only her, but a lot of the other people that worked in the factory, you know, if they had bread or whatever, they ate a lot of bread and butter. On average, Victorians ate 2 pounds of bread a day.
Wow.
And often that bread was mixed, the flour was mixed with plaster of Paris to stretch it to make cheaper bread.
I never knew that.
In the Victorian era, actually, that was when you had the farmer and then the person who milled the flour and then the baker. So there were all these separate people doing all these separate jobs. Well, before that, you had one person doing it. And in the Victorian era, it got split up.
Uh-huh.
So you would go to the baker and get your bread. Well, in the Victorian era, it was customary to find the bread that was the whitest. That was like highbrow bread, you know, like if you wanted to impress people, you wanted to have pure white bread. Well, the miller that milled the flour for you probably added plaster of Paris or alum.
Oh boy.
To the flour to stretch it, to make
that
it
would've killed your
go
gut.
Further. The baker then probably would have added it again.
Bye.
So, I mean, you're getting a double dose here. And the loaves of bread were like little, I mean, they were like little bricks. They were like little statues because they had plaster of Paris and alum in them. And so people would buy it and they'd put it out on their table and all of their guests would ooh and ah over how white the bread was. But, you know, not knowing that, you know, this is what we're mixing in with your bread. Yeah.
Ooh.
So it was pretty crazy. See here.
No wonder people back then died so young.
Yeah, you know, I mean, think about it, like gastrointestinally, I mean, that's terrible. Like, how do you can't digest that. There's no possible way for you to digest that. And you're eating like 2 pounds a day, pounds of bread a day. I mean, they had on the documentary that I watched, the one of the presenters was saying that, you know, when they went to the bakery, they would have different choices of different loaves that they could buy. And so just for an experiment, they told, you know, the documentarian or whatever, you know, pick which loaf of bread you would choose, you know, nowadays. And so she picked up this very light, like crusty brown bread and was like, you know, it was, if I were a Victorian woman, I would probably want this because it looks the best. And the lady was like, no, you know, they would want this little shitty loaf that's like as big as your hand and is like a, like weighs a ton. I mean, it was like a brick. And then they would just slather it with butter and eat it. Yeah, that was it. In Matilda's case, as was the case for garment workers like her who held that position, she eventually did die from her exposure and in a very violent manner. So she was convulsing. She expelled green foam from her eyes, nose, and mouth. Upon examination of her body after her passing, it was found that this green powder that she was working with had even infiltrated her lungs, her stomach, and her liver.
Oh,
so
wow.
Her internal organs were sheer green. It's pretty crazy.
Wow.
After Matilda's death, an organization called the Ladies Sanitary Organization, or LSO, Miss Nicholson specifically, was particularly vocal regarding the horrifying conditions in which people worked within the factories, and she published a first-hand account of her findings after she, you know, took a tour of the factories. She stated that some of the women were half-dressed. They were complaining of, quote, a dreadful cold, and they were walking around with handkerchiefs pressed to their faces, and when they would pull the handkerchiefs away, they would just be red with blood. It was pretty bad.
So they could have been misdiagnosed as having consumption or...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because, I mean, like, how do you diagnose something new when you have no way to research it? And, I mean, you don't understand how, you know, certain things are transmit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a rough idea,
right.
But it's all very, you know, there's nothing concrete about what you know.
Right.
So, I'm sure that they looked at it and they were like, oh, Mrs. Jones just has a cold.
Mm-hmm.
And then a week later, she's, you know, convulsing and dies, and all
right.
of her organs are green. Well, that's not what happens when you have a cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, nowadays you don't generally die from a cold. Back then, maybe you did, but, I mean, it would depend on your lot in life and your status
right.
and, you know, whatever. The other really common side effect of working with this powder was blindness. A lot of the women were blind, at least in one eye. They would have sores on their faces and their hands. Those were very common exposure-related ailments. The association commissioned a Dr. A.W. Hoffman, a world-renowned chemist, to analyze the flowers contained in the average headdress. Hoffman finds that one headdress, just one headdress from this factory, contains enough arsenic to poison 20 people.
Oh my God.
And a ball gown made from 20 yards of fabric could contain upwards of 900 grains of arsenic.
Wow.
And, I mean, when you consider arsenic was also used to produce shoes and gloves
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I mean, things that women wore every day on a regular basis.
Wow.
The fact that the white arsenic used to dye clothes was dirt cheap and alluring to clothiers was attractive, and many hundreds of tons were used annually in consumer goods.
Oh, wow.
So even small children could purchase it over the counter at any pharmacy. I mean, it was just insane. It wasn't until the passing of the Arsenic Act in 1868 that the amount sold to individuals was regulated, but there were still no limits imposed on large-scale operations like the factories that were producing goods. By the 1880s, arsenic had been banned from use in the clothing industry, but was still often used in marketing materials and packaging. Luckily, the move away from arsenic-dyed clothing was hastened by the creation of certain synthetic dyes, but public concern also helped to turn the tide. The use of arsenic was only banned, officially banned, in Scandinavia, France, and Germany. And Britain actually never banned the practice.
Oh, wow.
It actually just kind of fell out of fashion. So, you know, or to wear certain things. So
mm-hmm.
they would just not, you know,
creative.
It was just done. Yeah, that was it. So, yeah, it was never officially banned. Now, men were not free from being afflicted by their clothing. In men's hats, they actually had a hidden killer in them as well. While women were adorning themselves with the poisonous foliage and attire, the men of the period also dressed in garments that were laced with mercury.
Oh.
Men's hats were felted using hair and rabbit fur, and they were brushed with mercury in order to make the very fine hairs stick together and adhere. So, of course, hatters of the time were the hardest hit by exposure. because the men's hats had little liners in them. So, they would touch the hat to put it on.
Right.
But the people who were making the hats were the ones that actually had to brush them and create them.
Right.
Many of these hat makers experienced neuromotor and psychological problems. Some theorize that the phrase "mad as a hatter" was coined to describe those who suffered from mercury poisoning. So, pretty interesting.
Wow.
Cardiorespiratory problems and tooth loss were common side effects of prolonged exposure. But as I said, only the hatters would experience these extreme side effects. The use of mercury in hat making was never explicitly banned in Britain. Rather, hats just fell out of fashion in the 1960s. And men just weren't wearing them anymore, so the practice just died out.
Okay.
In Victorian England, as well as in other parts of the world during this time period, women would swathe themselves in hooped gowns layered with cotton and tulle, or tully. They would move around spaces lit with candles, oil lamps, fireplaces. They, of course, moved with the grace of the Hindenburg, because they were swathed in so many different layers of clothing.
Right.
So it's no small wonder that women were victims of their environment.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the poet Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's wife is said to have caught fire and died from her injuries.
Oh, wow.
She sustained severe burns and passed away the following day. Apparently, a piece of paper had fallen on her gown, and it just caused her to immediately ignite. I mean, she just went up like a Roman candle. Longfellow undoubtedly wore a fitted wool suit, which was common attire of gentlemen of the period, allowing him to move a lot more safely around in his environment. So, bully for him. And, I mean, you know, honestly, it's a wonder anyone survived.
It is.
Anyone at all. So that's fashion in the Victorian era.
As you were telling the story, I was thinking about just Gone with the Wind. And I was envisioning, what was her name? Mm. Vivian Leigh in Scarlett O'Hara.
Yeah, Scarlett O'Hara. Yeah,
in the drapery, the green drapery.
Because we know that wasn't coated with arsenic.
Well, she was evil anyway, so...
this documentary that I watched in preparation for this episode, you really need to watch it, because there's like a creepy guy on there. He's like a kind of Dr. Strangelove character who is just phenomenal. He's just amazing. He's so funny. He doesn't intend to be funny, but he comes off as very like odd and he's little just creepy.
Naturally humorous.
Yeah, he's a little he's just a little creepy. I don't know.
Okay.
But,
All right. So, last week we were talking about gangsters.
Yes.
And
yes, we
for
were.
Some reason, I just wanted to continue.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked up Al Capone and some places that he might have been at.
Yep.
So that's how I got to this house in Mequon that's haunted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here I'm going to start my story. In Mequon, Wisconsin, a stone's throw away from the city of Milwaukee, lies an old farmhouse. The building was built in 1841 and became a stop for the Underground Railroad. This farmhouse has a varied and unique history. It was a farmstead, a stop for the Underground Railroad, a gangster roadhouse, a steakhouse, and banquet hall, and now a private residence. Under the building are tunnels that slaves used to escape from, you know, escape to freedom. Who knew? In Mequon. I mean,
yeah.
I knew that there's some stops, like the Rangeline Inn, supposedly, was one, a stop along the way. And there's some other places in Wisconsin, you know, that helped the slaves escape and everything. But I never knew, just down the block from me. and I've been to this house because it was once a steakhouse. But okay, so.
And we all know how much you love steak.
I do.
I had steak yesterday for dinner.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, well, I didn't.
I thought about you while I was eating my steak. I was like, Mimi would really like this steak.
Yeah, I do like steak. So the tunnel system goes from this farmhouse. There's one tunnel that goes all the way to Green Bay Road. There's, it used to be the Bruce City Barbecue.
Okay.
And Sybaris is also there.
Oh, God.
So this tunnel goes under the Sybaris there, and it goes, turns to the river.
For those of you who don't know what a Sybaris is, thank your lucky stars that you don't, because it's gross. They're just so, they're like adult hotels.
Yes, so you can get your happy on with your significant other.
Yeah, but it's like some of the rooms have like slides in them into like little pools and
hot tubs, whatever, and heart-shaped
beds and whatever. It's gross.
Yeah. So okay.
Don't take a black lung to that place.
Actually, Bill and I stayed there once.
Well, then definitely don't take a black light into that place.
No. It was clean. We were in a very clean room.
You think it was clean.
Well, neither one of us got ill. So.
Well, I guess that's the main thing.
And the funniest part of that experience, though, was that they had these movies. Mm. And we just, they had like regular names.
Like adult films?
Well, we thought they were just regular movies. Oh, so God. We didn't bother trying out. And later we found out that they're naughty movies. Mm-hmm. And we were like, oh, we should have watched, but we didn't.
Wait, you were like, Debbie Does Dallas. What is that about? No, I don't know. I guess it's just Debbie going to Dallas.
They had regular movie names like Risky Business.
Oh.
So, you know, it's like, we didn't want to watch any of those, but had we known they were pornos, we would have watched them. Okay, so, anywho, so the tunnel system, okay, so one tunnel went to the Bruce City Barbecue. Then another tunnel went down County Line Road to some farmhouse, which there are many along that route, so right. I don't know which one, but I did tell my husband that one night when it's really dark out, I want to go drive around. But
that must be so fascinating to have like the exit for like an underground.
I know.
In your house?
I know. Well, I guess they show some pictures on you know, Google.
Yeah.
And they walled it up, but I would love to just go and knock it down and trample really through there and just to see it. Just to see what it's like. Yeah. So let's see. So then in the 1920s, it became a roadhouse. After it was a farmhouse and, you know. So it became a roadhouse, which served many crew, as I put my air quotes up, from area mafia, including mob boss Al Capone. I guess he used to frequent there.
Oh.
But unfortunately, this story doesn't talk about Al Capone very much. Mm. But, the tunnel that went to the brew house and then to the river was used by the mobsters for liquor runs and whatever.
Okay.
And then the house, of course, what goes along with liquor and mobs but gambling and prostitution.
Right, absolutely.
So, again, the farmhouse turned in, you know, to a place with prostitution and gambling.
Yep.
And there was a woman who was the madam of the place. And, well, let me go back a step. Okay, so in this house.
Okay.
See, if I don't read my script. All right. So in the building, the second floor of the building housed the prostitutes. And there's bedrooms in there, small rooms that they used for their, you know.
Yep.
And there were small, there's still really old dressers and water basins there. Mm. And then there's this one big room at the end, which was considered to be the madam's bedroom. Okay. And there's a huge mural that still exists where she's painted naked. They assume it's her. We don't really know if it was her or not. But she's naked lounging on a, a couch. Mm-hmm. And I guess at one point it was a Mexican restaurant, which I never knew. So they covered over the face in Mexican colors, but the body was the same. So it was kind of, it's kind of odd now, but it's still there. Huh. It's just
that's interesting. Odd.
But so they think that that was her room, and then there's this bathtub in there, and it still has the original bathtub, an old, you know, enameled one.
Right.
And she apparently died in the bathtub. Did she slip and hit her head by accident, or was it a lover? We don't really know. But there was a man who discovered her body, and the customers and people who were in the place at the time found him with her body and immediately just said, hey, he murdered her and threw him down the stairs, and he immediately died.
Oh.
And we have no idea if he actually murdered her or not.
Hmm.
It said that he was buried somewhere on the property, but they don't know where.
Okay.
People believe that both the madam and the man who was killed are still haunting the house. One of the managers, when it was a steakhouse, went down to the basement where there's a storage area, and she was the only one who had a key to the storage area. She opens the door, and she sees these chairs that are stacked on top of each other, about 20 chairs tall, but they're in kind of the shape of an upside-down pyramid.
Oh.
They're balancing on one chair on the bottom.
Yeah.
And then on top of the chair was a little religious figurine. And she freaked out, and she ran, and then she came back the next morning, and she opens up the door, and the chairs were stacked neatly in a corner, like they had never been moved.
Huh.
Okay, now some people think, oh, well, maybe, you know, his ghost was trying to say where he's buried or something, but nobody ever dug it up or anything.
Right.
But they think it was really weird. Okay. So then there was another manager who went down to pick up some liquor or whatever, and he heard footsteps coming towards him.
Okay.
So he turns around, and he sees a man going up the stairs. It's like a shadowy man, so he thinks, oh, who's in the building? I thought I was alone. And he goes to look, and it's gone.
Huh.
So he was kind of freaked out. So then the other kind of things that happen are like little annoyance things, like things being moved. One waitress was in the kitchen, and, you know, when they wash the dishes, they put the knives in the knife holder, you know, whatever.
Right.
And a knife flew at her and missed her by mere inches.
Oh.
That was the only real violent. Okay, so she narrowly got missed by this flying knife. Mm. There weren't any other really violent happenings. There were instances where rooms had been locked and then they're unlocked, or rooms that were previously unlocked and then all of a sudden they're locked.
Right.
Same with windows being open that were locked shut. One man was alone in the building, and he heard a desk chair from the office, which was upstairs, dragged across the floor, and he goes upstairs and nobody's there. Bear taps have been turned on when nobody's there, and all of a sudden the beer's running out.
Right. Oh, there's a lot of activity.
Yeah. A former chef named Don was in the basement. He's the one who heard the steps coming around and saw the figure. Mm. So there's a lot of activity, but it'll be really interesting to see if the new owners who are currently, it's being remodeled right now. I mean, okay. I did kind of skirt by.
Yep, right. Well, you live like practically next door to the place.
I do. So they're remodeling. So it'll be interesting if we ever hear any more about hauntings going on there. Who knew in Mequon?
Right.
So, so I'm, you know, like you like to research different things from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really interested in what's happening in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So eventually I'll branch out, but right now I want to study more about my own state.
Well, you know, it's really, I mean, you know, where I'm from in Canada, culture is very important. And I found that since coming to the U.S., there are a lot of people that don't know where they come from or don't know their culture. And for me, I mean, that's just baffling because my culture is a part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you want to research Wisconsin and, you know, like, you know, or stuff in your culture or whatever, you know, I mean, yeah, bring it. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I love it. It's great.
I always was really interested. Where I grew up in Glendale, there were woods, and in these woods, I think I told a story once about...
About the worms?
The woods and the worms and the dream I had. But yeah. All along the Milwaukee River there is supposed to be burial grounds, Indian burial grounds. And Clutch Park has an area. Actually, most of the park is supposedly, air quotes again, built on burial grounds. And if you go, I don't know if you've ever been to Clutch Park, but there's this tiny waterfall. And I find it really interesting, very calming when I go there. I like to just sit by the waterfall. Yeah. And not that it's anything paranormal or anything, but it's just so beautiful there.
Yeah.
And so peaceful. But I'd like to know more about the actual history of Glendale and Mequon. And I think it's neat.
Well, and I mean, you know, the more I explore Milwaukee and the more I, you know, kind of go out of my comfort zone to find new places, I found that there are a lot of places that are quite old and have a lot of history.
Yes.
And, I mean, where I come from, there's a lot of history, you know, but it's not like mob history.
Right, I mean...
You know, it's not like Indian burial ground stuff. It's like Irish folklore and, you know, stuff like that. So it's kind of like the other side of the coin for me.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
I guess I never really thought of Wisconsin Plains Indians, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
I never really thought about it being anything interesting for a mobster to go to.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I'm finding it very interesting because he's actually been to quite a few places in Wisconsin.
Yeah, right.
So one of my next things I wanted to research was about Hayward, Wisconsin, where he was supposed to have another, I don't know if it was another roadhouse or just a place that he would go to vacation at. But I heard about it, so I wanted to research that one, too. So,
isn't there something close to, I think it's close to Eagle, Wisconsin?
Yes.
It's, like, called the Hideaway?
Yes.
Or something?
Yes.
And that was, like, a mob?
Yes.
I don't know if it was, like, a mob front or if it was...
No, I think they actually were there, too, because I was Googling just a little bit.
Yeah.
Researching, and there's just a lot of stuff.
Yeah, because, you know, this, this four-hour road trip in any direction that we're... Mm-hmm. Planning.
Yep.
that popped up, and I was like, oh, the Hideaway, that's interesting. And there's like a picture of a mobster on the sign or something. I was like, that'd probably be really cool to look at, but I don't know if it's within the 4 hours.
Well, I think it is.
Yeah. It's probably right at the top.
But I know that one of the buildings that he was at, I don't remember where, I have to look it up.
Sure.
But it was riddled with bullet holes, and supposedly some mobsters who were with Al Capone had hidden money somewhere on the property.
Oh.
So this guy bought the property,
and
it still had the bullet holes, and he's been searching for years and years and years for the money.
I have to
find out if he ever found it.
Yeah.
But... there's going to be a lot more gangster stuff.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. No, I actually heard that there used to be a mob museum in Chicago, but it's been closed down.
Oh.
It's been closed down for a few years now.
Okay.
It was something about glorifying Al Capone when, you know, Al Capone was a criminal and whatever, and I guess there were certain groups that didn't appreciate that and didn't like it, so they wound up shutting the place down.
Which, too bad.
I don't really understand why. I mean, I guess I get it from a certain point of view of, you know, you don't want to, what's the word, you don't want
to... Glorify gangsters and criminals.
Yes.
But
I mean, you don't want to glorify the criminal lifestyle.
Yeah.
But it's history.
Right.
Like,
it's history, and, you know, maybe parts of him weren't always evil and bad.
Right. Well, didn't I hear I thought that there was a story about, like, him giving away Thanksgiving turkeys or something off a truck to to people in Chicago? I don't know.
I'll have to look that one up too.
I mean, I feel like in some ways he was a generous guy. As long as you didn't cross him.
Mm-hmm.
If you got on the bad side of Al Capone, you know, forget about it. You know, you're done. But I mean, I feel like there have been stories, or I've heard stories of certain things that he's done that weren't. I mean, now where did he get the turkey? Well, he probably stole it. You know, but it's like a Robin Hood kind of a thing. You know, yeah. it more or less enamors me to the idea of this Robin Hood figure versus this guy who was having right. people whacked and, you know, thrown in the in right. Lake Michigan and, you right. know, whatever, you know.
Right.
So, but yeah, no, absolutely. More mobsters. I love that.
Yep.
more haunted places with mobsters and
yes,
lots and lots of creepy shit. Yes. Love it.
I like ghost stories.
I've always liked ghost stories.
Yeah,
it's always been a lot of fun.
I made my husband promise to. I think I said this. Did I say this earlier? I'm sorry. I'm tired. But the Brumder Mansion, that's yes. bed and breakfast. I yep. told my husband I want to go there for our anniversary.
Oh. Nice. When yeah. is your anniversary?
August.
Oh, August
14th.
Yeah, you're gonna have to take some EVPs and
yeah,
try to talk politely, of course.
Absolutely.
Don't put anything in what's her face's closet.
Might just have to.
Just to see what happens.
Have to tease the ghost just a little.
Well, you
but
know,
with respect.
Yes, with the utmost respect, tease them.
Absolutely.
Yep. So let's see. Anything else this week? I don't have anything to apologize for.
Oh, that's good. So that's good. Always a good thing. Anything else this week? No.
No?
Just
think we're good.
Cleaning the house and
oh, God.
Throwing things away and giving things away.
Purging.
And, oh, yeah. The yeah. great purge. It's just wonderful. I really haven't done that. And we've been in that house for 15 years.
Oh, wow. You'll have so much more cupboard space now.
Probably not, but
oh, no?
At least it won't be stuffed to the brim. I like things.
Yeah, me too. I have a problem.
Tchotchkes and stuff.
Yeah.
Not dead stuff,
though. Not dead stuff? I feel like you're offending the dead stuff.
No, because for some reason, I'm very enamored of your pig.
Oh, you like Walter?
I do, and I yeah. really like the crow.
I keep looking for a little bowler hat for Walter and a little monocle.
Oh.
Because I feel like he's British. I don't know. There's just something about him that he looks British. I'll have to post a picture on Twitter so
well,
that you
I'll
guys can see him.
I'll have to keep an eye out for you.
Yeah, a tiny little, like, child-sized bowler mm-hmm. hat. Yeah, it would fit perfectly. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. He needs clothes.
Oh, and a little bow tie, maybe.
And a little bow tie. Yeah. Yeah, I'll share some pictures with you guys of some of the dead things that
yeah.
that Mimi is talking about. All right, well, I guess that is it for us this week. Again, thank you so much for listening to us.
It was very fun.
Yeah, we appreciate it. So, you guys have a great day.
Ciao.
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 Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. For more Hauntheads, check out our blog at WordPress. You can find it at hauntheads.wordpress.com. We'd also like to thank you for your iTunes reviews, because your reviews will help us improve, and we value them greatly. You can find our podcast on Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Podknife, and Blueberry. And don't forget to send us your paranormal stories or favorite folklore tales. You send them our way, we'll read them on the show. It's awesome. So you can send those to hauntheadscast@gmail.com. Keep listening and stay spooky.